Welcome, everyone, once again to another episode of Riders and Fighters, a podcast. I'm your host, AJ Ortega. And remember that every week I interview someone involved in riding or someone involved in fighting. This is episode 39, and I have an independent pro wrestler on the show. ASF, a.k.a. Antonio San Francisco, a.k.a. the Sweet Hispanic Boy, a.k.a. El Dulce Niño Hispano. He wrestles out of Laredo, Texas, and was my first pick to kick off Latino Heritage Month. I'm just a Mexican-American writer and fight fan and podcast host, and I'm trying to get my shit out there in the world. So I'm always wanting to support La Raza, and that's why I reached out to ASF. He's been grinding in the wrestling game, getting out there and taking what's his, and he's about to blow up even more than he already has. In this interview, we talk about the Sweet Hispanic Boy gimmick, how he got into wrestling, his thoughts on being a smaller guy in the locker room, the differences between Mexican lucha style and American wrestling, and a number of other things. He's doing big stuff in the wrestling world and has a match coming up with GCW Game Changer Wrestling on September 24th. So, without belaboring the point, I want to get straight to the interview. So, let's hear from ASF, El Dulce Niño Hispano. Enjoy. All right, y'all, this is the interview portion of the show, and I am joined by a gentleman that I know as ASF, a.k.a. a Sweet Hispanic Boy from Laredo, Texas. ASF, Antonio, how are you doing, buddy?
How's it going? ¿Cómo estamos? How's everybody doing? Thank you for having me, first of all. I'm excited to be here. I have seen some of your links out there on social media, and I'm like, how come AJ has never asked me to be on his podcast?
Well, people, your name's come up a couple times on the show, just like, you know, who's out there, who's doing good, and your name does come up. So maybe for the audience, who are you? What's your name? What are you about, man?
I'm Antonio San Francisco, El Dulce Niño Hispano, the Sweet Hispanic Boy. I'm a professional wrestler, independent professional wrestler, located in Laredo, Texas, but I travel all over. Recently, I've been getting a good buzz because of Twitter. I've been working more with Game Changer Wrestling. And since they have a big following, they have given me a big platform, and I'm gaining more followers and a little buzz, I'd like to say. I want to keep it rolling. That's what's going on. No, that's who I am.
No, that's great. Yeah, and I'm acquainted with you through the wrestling scene, particularly there in Laredo, where everybody's just been great to me and in terms of getting in the ring here and there as a referee, and we did one of those Lucha and the Library gigs together, but always been aware of your name and your work. And congrats on the getting these gigs with bigger independent promotions and getting more eyes on you, and also just like your style, and it's part of the name, Sweet Hispanic Boy, that you are Mexicano from Laredo, right?
Yep, border town, Hispanic, Mexicano.
Exactly, there we go. And we are at the beginning of Hispanic Heritage Month, Latino Heritage Month. And so I was like, who can I reach out to? Where are the brown folks I can get on the podcast? And so your name came up.
Here you go.
So tell me about the Sweet Hispanic Boy gimmick, El Dulce Niño Hispano. How did that come up? Or even the name, Antonio San Francisco, which is ASF, and that's kind of the gimmick. How did that all come about?
It came about, I used to wrestle my first 2 years under a mask. I had a generic name. I wasn't getting anywhere, I like to say. And a friend of mine, you guys may know him, Aces from Aces. He makes boots and gear. We talked. I had told him I kind of want to take this mask off. And he convinced me not to for a few months. But then he came up with an idea of this gimmick that is a womanizer, that is a cute guy that likes to seduce girls in the crowd, whatever. And I said, let's try it. I felt uncomfortable as hell doing it. And I told him, I don't want to do this. A year passed. I'm like, hey, let's do that because I really like the name you gave me, but let me do my thing. And the name is my middle name. Antonio is my middle name.
Okay.
And San Francisco is a street I lived on as a kid.
Oh, okay. Wow. And so you just kind of put those together. And it does have a nice ring to it. It sounds like a Hispanic Latino name, right? And it's not Antonio San Francisco. It's Antonio San Francisco, right?
Antonio San Francisco. Yeah, so that's the name. The Sweet Hispanic, Dulce Niño Hispano. That actually came about because before COVID struck hard, before we all went into lockdown, I wrestled in Austin for AAPW in Austin, Texas. And they had a commentary team that had never seen me before and wasn't familiar with me. So they went up to me and asked me a few questions to say on commentary. So all I had to say was, all you guys have to say is, I'm a sweet Hispanic boy that comes from Laredo, Texas. And that's the first time I said that. And it stuck in my head. And I just told everybody, I just kept rolling with it. I am a sweet Hispanic boy, and I'm just going to do it.
No, that's great. I like that. And I think it's also cool and interesting that you kind of realize you weren't really getting traction under the mask, right? And so that becomes part of it, the removal of the mask, and being a good-looking cat helps, certainly. And so, and then the name, and then you put it all together. And here we are. When did you first get into wrestling, though? I'm always curious, how do these weirdos find their way into this world? So how did you find wrestling?
I'll be honest, I've said this a couple of times, but I don't really like to say it because it sounds a little too full of yourself. But I think wrestling found me.
Right.
I didn't find wrestling. When I was four, I'm pretty sure since before I was four, my dad would take me to the Lucha Libre shows in Nuevo Laredo, Tamaulipas, crossing the border here. And it wasn't for me, it was more for him to go drink with his buddies and my uncles. But as a kid, as a small kid, you just fall in love with it. And then through my teenage years, I would watch it secretly from my friends because I was one of the popular kids in school. But I would always watch it. It wasn't until high school where I just lashed out and said, I watch this. I don't care what anybody thinks. I'm going to be a wrestler one day.
Right.
And I graduated high school, looked for wrestling schools, and I got lucky enough. Estelaris Jr. had some trainings going on 3 blocks from where I live.
Oh, sure.
So I just ended up there. And then after Estelaris stepped out, after like the first 3 months of my training, Laredo Kid stepped in and I got so lucky and I got to train with Laredo Kid for like 3 years. And that's how I found wrestling again
Oh,
after
yeah.
so many years,
No,
right?
that's great. Estelaris Jr. Again, good family. Again, nice people I run into down there in Laredo as well. Very cool. Very cool. And again, Laredo Kid just big now, and you got to train under somebody with that kind of a pedigree. What about the beginning of training, though? And so, and I like that also you mentioned you kind of did, you watch wrestling, but in secret, right? Because, oh, well, I don't want people to know I'm into this thing that is seen as childish or seen as silly or juvenile. But now you're
People call
doing
it
it,
fake
right?
all the time.
Right, and that it's fake, and oh, you know, it's, well, yeah, we know that, but there's an entire industry, as we know now, and it's, there's a boom in wrestling happening, right? Wrestling comes in waves, and it's in a boom right now, so it's a serious big-time industry. Now you're in it. What about the start of that training, though?
The start of training was hard. Even though I was pretty athletic all the time because I played sports throughout my teenage years. But wrestling training is something else. The first day of training, I got there. I wasn't allowed on the ring at all. I didn't have knee pads either. I did a mistake. I didn't ask, so I got there. No knee pads. Nothing. They didn't let me get in the ring. They just made me watch. After, they're like, "You still want to do this?" I'm like, "Yeah." I'm pretty sure they thought I was going to go back. The next day, I showed up with knee pads ready to go. They had me do rolls for like the whole month. I got bored of just doing front rolls,
For
front rolls.
a month. That's great.
And then they saw something. I mean, because I don't know if you guys are familiar with Latino Fever back then, Adrian Ayala. He started training with me, not that same day, but he had a week or a month, something like that, before me. He was there. So they had seen him. And then I got there and they saw both of us. And that's when we got going. I want to say me and this other dude, us three, was what motivated that little training group to actually want to keep pushing because we were the ones that kept going. We never stopped. And
Competition's good, and
train.
people on your level, that's good to have that in a group and not that, oh, everybody's kind of half-assing it, and I'm kind of
Yeah,
like,
no.
you don't want to be like the only one that's there grinding. You want to have your peers doing the same way so you build each other up. It's interesting.
Yeah. So the first, I want to say the first 4 months of training were kind of hard for me. Were the hardest because it's always hard training. It's still hard training, but the first 4 months, I really like had to think twice if I wanted to be a wrestler or not. I thought it was going to be easier, but I pushed through it and we're still here.
Yeah, right. What kind of memories do you have? Anything that either happened to you or one of your peers there while you were training that kind of trying to break you kind of stuff happens a lot, or people washing out? Like, any specific memories about that early training you got?
Oh, I have a lot, and I tell them all the time. There's a few wrestlers right now here in Laredo locally that would look down on me and look like, oh, like, just get out the way. You're bothering. And now I'm like, am I bothering now?
Right.
But I'm kidding, right? And they're like, oh, stop. We're just giving you a hard time. I'm like, yeah, I get it. But there's this one instant where I did my first suicide dive training, and they moved, and I landed on concrete. That's one fond memory I have. That they're all like, we thought you were going to get scared and not going to do it. And here goes Antonio flying through the ring, landing on concrete.
No, that's good. And that's one of the things you do excel at in the dives and stuff like this. And I remember being at the Lucha at the Library gig with you, and y'all were figuring out your thing in the back, how the match is going to go and so on. And there was going to be a spot where you were going to dive. And I said, hey, well, dive over me because I'm the referee. And again, I love that spot where the referee is right there, and then you jump over the referee and outside of the ring. And you were just no hesitation. You were like, oh yeah, we could do that. And just it just happened perfectly in the ring. And I was like, that was so cool. Beautiful little moment there that I was happy to be a part of. You springboard over me and into the opponent.
That was the first time a ref actually asks to be like, oh, can y'all do this? I was like, oh, of course we can do that. Yeah. And I have the clip.
Yeah, I gave you the little GIF. Yeah, I made a little GIF out of it, and I sent it to you. I got the little video clip of that. And I've always liked that, because there are folks in the back that will ask me sometimes, like, hey, we want to do this spot. Can you do that? Oh, yeah, I'll do whatever you guys tell me. Mm-hmm. That's the point. And but that one, I was like, that's too easy. That's too natural. Yeah, just jump over me. And it was such an easy opening, and it would look good. And it did. It looked great. It was very cool. And that Mexican style with the dives and things like this, what can you say about the Mexican lucha style versus the American style?
I want to say the Mexican style is a little faster. It's a little more fast paced, and it's a lot more hard hitting. The American style, in my point of view, it's more storytelling, more of the aspects of what's going on, of get the people engaged. And when it's lucha libre, we just want to get the crowd going. We just want them hot the whole show.
Sure.
I don't know if you've noticed all the crazy stuff we do.
Yeah, that's kind of my perception too, in that also with Japanese wrestling, but Mexican wrestling and Japanese style also, that it's pleasing to look at. The eye, the acrobatics, the flips, the dives, that people like to see that because it looks more impressive, right? With Hurricane Ranas and things like this and suicide dives, versus the American style, which is, again, lots of fundamental storytelling thing, good versus evil kind of things, but less fast-paced and maybe not keeping that high energy. The American style builds up to that big moment and things like this, whereas Lucha's just at 10 the whole way, right? I mean, there's been times where I'm in the ring as a referee and I'm like, and it's a tag match with Lucha. I'm like, Jesus Christ, I can't control these guys. Literally can't control them. And they're just all over the place. So it can be a lot, even for like a referee being in there. I'm like, there's so much shit going on in this ring right now. And so that's something I've observed as well. So I think that's a pretty good summary that you brought up there. Yeah, for sure. And so the Sweet Hispanic Boy gimmick lends itself to being a fan favorite, I think. But do you ever work as a heel, or are you always babyface?
Usually they have me being the good guy. But when I do get to do the bad guy, it's fun. I'm just me either way. Like, I just do me. I started off the ASF gimmick being a little arrogant kid.
Right.
So a lot of people did boo me at first. But then I started realizing, okay, people cheer me more than I get booed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I do think that your style, I mean, the look and the style lends itself to being a fan favorite. I definitely think that that's part of your success, I think. Along with that, what could you say about, I'm not blowing the door open on this, but like, you're one of the smaller guys in the locker room. What about the size thing, right? Like, how have you figured that out? Because I can imagine you walking into wrestling training and stuff like that, and you being the smaller guy. and that there's all these big boys around and stuff like this, and that, yeah, they might be kind of dismissive. What about that, your size and working with that, you know, versus like, you know, your actual skills and talent?
The size thing is always brought up every locker room, whether anybody wants to say, oh, no, it's not, you're lying. It's always brought up. I was in one locker room recently with a guy I'm not going to mention, but he kept bugging, oh, size matters, just because one guy had a shirt that says size matters. But this guy's Sam Stackhouse, his gimmick is size matters because he's a big boy.
Sure.
But he wasn't the one complaining about it. It was the other guy complaining to me that size matters. And all I did was tell him, just watch this match.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Watch this match. My talent is going to speak for itself. It doesn't matter if you're 6-something. My talent speaks for itself. I don't need to be 6'7" to be able to put on a good match. I'm 5'5", 132 pounds. And I have people admiring me, wanting to be me. And that's all I care about. Inspiring the next generation of Hispanic boys and girls that are coming up.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, I mean, I personally can't believe why people are still hung up on that old mentality. I mean, that's what it is. It's an antiquated way of looking at wrestling, because I'm thinking of a bunch of folks in the pro wrestling world that don't fit that mold, you know, and that were quote unquote undersized, but made really good names for themselves, have become champions in all sorts of promotions and on television and so on. Who do you admire in terms of like the wrestlers in the big leagues or even in the indies? Like, who was it that you were like, hey, I kind of want to do that, but my way or whatever? Like, who do you look up to or admire in the wrestling world?
Who I want to say, when I was a kid, the person I would admire the most was La Parca, the one that recently passed away.
Oh, sure. Of course.
Him. Then as I grew older, everybody admires John Cena. I'm a John Cena fan.
100%.
I'm also an Edge fan. Yeah. Rey Mysterio, of course. Rey Mysterio. Amazing Red is another one of my big influences. When I discovered Finn Balor as Prince Devitt back then, I pretty much stole a lot of the things he was doing when I started off wrestling, because that's the style I wanted to portray myself as. One of my trainers is also, both of my trainers are my two biggest idols in wrestling. Like, when they say, like, don't meet your heroes, well, I've met my heroes, and I love both of them.
Nice.
It's Laredo Kid and Daga, you know, Daga?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Those are both my trainers, and I idolize those guys because of the work ethic they have, the way they're always working out, the way they're always putting in work so they can be ready for the next thing that's coming. As they always tell me, you're supposed to stay ready for the opportunity, not get ready when an opportunity is presented.
Yeah, I think you named some good folks there, you know, from La Parca, again, very a staple in lucha for so many years. And again, such a good recognizable costume in the ring, and a good, and that lucha style, and being bigger for a luchador also, I thought was really interesting with him. John Cena, the most likable guy, you know, I went through my phase of not liking Cena, but he's the best ever. I mean, he's the best ever, right? Like, and I knew Rey Mysterio was going to come up. He's one of our guys. It's so great to see this little Mexican with a tattoo that says Mexican on his stomach. It's beautiful.
On his stomach.
I was not expecting Finn Balor, but you mentioned that. That's where you got the sling blade from, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually, I kind of changed it. I bounce off the rope or I jump off the second rope, but it's still an homage pretty much.
Yeah. And I like that kind of almost like a springboard style sling blade. Not exactly a springboard, because you handspring, your legs hit the rope upside down, and then you do that sling blade on the return. Beautiful. And it looks, and again, you use your size. You can move that way. Not everybody can move that way. And so a sling blade with a little bit of flavor on it looks nicer. And so I think you have some good choices there, certainly. And, you know, and Prince Devitt, a.k.a. Finn Balor, wrestled everywhere, done everything. And again, not the biggest guy, but really innovative and technically sound, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I definitely like that. And so we talked about the different styles, Mexican and American, but what about actual, like, the venue being in the USA versus a venue being in Mexico, when your crowd is, in fact, Mexican versus a crowd that is Less Mexican, right? What about that?
In Mexico, the crowds really, how do you say it? They expect a lot because they get a lot every event. It's like in Mexico, every wrestler goes from start to finish. It's like a main event match for some reason. And it's starting to happen here in the States in every show I've been on also. Because yeah. Back then, it wasn't like that. Back then, you'd have restrictions. Like, your first match, you can't do this. But now it's like, oh, just go do your thing. But in Mexico, it's always been like that. The crowd is always really exigente in Spanish. Yeah. What's it in English? Sure. They really want more. They right. ask you, so they're awake. They're up. They're screaming. They're sure. asking you for more. And here in the States, sometimes I feel like they're waiting for it to build, and then they get hot, okay. which is what I love. Because you get the silence at first. You're starting off, and then it just skyrockets and you hear the uproar of the people and it just gets you going.
Yeah, I think that's great, man. Because I know that as an audience member, it feels different being in a indie show with an American audience versus being across the border. You know, I grew up in El Paso, so being in Juarez or, you know, seeing my family in the valley, crossing over to Reynosa and watching a wrestling match or something, and that mm-hmm. the crowd is just different. Yeah, and that they are there to party and to have a good time and stuff, and that the energy is a click higher and maintained that way throughout versus the peaks and valleys of an American card, right? Where you're building up to the main event, right? There's a big arc for the whole card. And I do think mm-hmm. that's distinctly different in Mexico, certainly. And so clearly being in Laredo, you know, you go back and forth, and so you have experience there. But coming onto this podcast right before I hit record, you said that you were, you know, busy and traveling. And I said, that's awesome. That's great. How has your travel been? And, you know, I know COVID must have, you know, affected some of this stuff. But tell me a little bit about your traveling. And, I see you're always somewhere else. You know, you're always somewhere in Texas and beyond. Tell me a little bit about your traveling and what kind of opportunities and things you've seen on your travels on the road.
Well, most recently, I've gotten lucky and fortunate enough that I've been able to be flown to different places now. If we were to have this podcast a year ago, I'd tell you, oh, we drive all over Texas to wrestle. We still do. But now I'm traveling even further. Friday, I was in L.A. for Game Changer Wrestling.
Nice.
And then Saturday, I was in Houston for local wrestling. And then yesterday, I topped it off here in Laredo at home. I wrestled for Lucha Maniacs, but the traveling is always exciting. You never know what's going to happen when you're on the road. Like we always stop at a Bucky's, and you never know what you're going to find at a Bucky's. And the flights, I experienced my first, what is it called? Flight delay.
Oh, sure. This weekend.
Yeah. We got on the plane, we got off, and we had to wait 2 hours. And I was like, so this is why everybody's complaining when they're on flights. But traveling, I've never had any inconveniences. I've always had a good travel everywhere I go. I've been lucky enough.
No, and that's good because I do know that that's typically the gig when you're trying to make it that, hey, let me get a couple of the guys in the car. Let's split some gas. Everybody throws their luggage and gear in the back. And there you are stopping at the Bucky's getting your Whataburger and whatnot. And so there you go. You're traveling that way. Now you're at the point where people are like, we need you out here. So here's your ticket. Jump on this plane and get your ass out here. That says something, you know, about your value, your talent, right? So I think that's certainly, you know, a new level. I had a question. I don't know why I thought this, but I put it in my notes that, oh man, wrestlers are such amazing, funny people. Again, there's times where I'm just like, just cracking up in the locker room and whatnot. Is the locker room ribbing, you know, practical jokes? Do people still do that? Or do still people still kind of clown each other and, you know, pull practical jokes in the back? Again, in this little fraternal organization, right? It's all dudes in the locker room and being dudes. So do they still do ribs in the locker room and whatnot? Because that's one of the things you hear a lot about this brotherhood of wrestling.
Oh, the jokes. Honestly, I want to say they are, but not like back then. If you hear stories from like the veteran wrestlers that they tell you all their stories from back in the day, like the ones that happened to be in the 80s and like 90s and stuff like that. They'll tell you crazy ribs they used to do. And we're just like, whoa, I just pulled this chair from this guy and he fell on his ass. That's the biggest rib I've done.
Oh, okay, sure.
But anything passing, I don't think anybody ribs that hard anymore. I think it's just like little cute ribs now, at least from my little circle that we get along, but nothing major.
No, yeah. So a goof for a laugh rather than like malicious hazing or something like then that to embarrass someone. Yeah.
Let me go put this bottle of pee in your bag and hope you squeeze it.
Right. Those kinds of things. So that's good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. A good gag that's in good fun is all good. But, yeah, I think some of that stuff, again, you hear those stories. And I'm like, do people still do that? It seems kind of weird and juvenile, but, you know, I like a good laugh anytime, too.
We prefer to play Super Mario Kart in the locker room now.
Oh, see, that's great, you know. And that's one of the things I was talking to a friend about, that there is this kind of evolution of the people involved in wrestling. And I say this not disparagingly at all. Like, the old school was like lots of weird hazing and like drugs and alcohol and all that crazy, like let's live rock star lifestyles. Like all the wrestlers I know are nerds. And again, I don't say it disparagingly. They're into comic books. They're into anime. They like playing video games. And I'm like, this is fucking cool. I was like, that's my shit too. I love that, you know? And that not just in the people I've interacted with, but like also like on the national level, on the people like on WWE and AEW and things like this are very open about their interests in things like that, collecting figures and stuff like that, which is just cool and wholesome and stuff that I'm into too. So I think that's interesting that you mentioned that. Yeah. What are your goals? So like you're on the up and up now. You're heading places. What kind of goals do you got as far as wrestling stuff goes, man?
Goals. I always set a goal for myself when I started this. My first goal is to stay happy doing this. If I don't feel happy at any point, I'm going to stop and I'm going to look for something to stay happy. I prefer to keep myself happy, my mental health on check, than being unhappy and, you know, not doing what I love. Another goal that I have is I personally have the goal of one day being signed to a major company. But we're still in the process. I'm still barely getting my feet wet on the indies, still barely getting my name out there. So I want to say I have a goal of maybe in the next 3 years to be headlining all these indie shows, all the major indie independent wrestling shows. You're going to see ASF on the main event every day. Friday, he's going to main event. Saturday, he's main eventing. Sunday, he's main eventing. Thursdays, every day of the week. That's what I want to get to. I want to be able to say I'm wrestling for a living.
Right, there you go. No, that's a good goal. And again, that you know, knowing that, you know, things are going well for you, but it's still getting your feet wet, it's still getting your name out there, because there are a bunch of indie promotions that are quite successful and do have regular big crowds and things like this, and they do have a lot of support. So I think that's a great goal. One of the things you also mentioned was that, like, this has to make you happy or else you can't do it, right? That, and I think that's a smart way to approach anything. I think that's smart. And you know, allude to your mental health and making sure you're happy. Are there times, though, when the wrestling business has affected that and kind of gotten you down? I recall one semi-serious injury, perhaps. Did that affect? I know there's the physical health stuff and then also, like, being mentally well. Has there been moments where you're down on either of those things, physically or mentally?
Honestly, yes. There's been several moments where I feel down about myself, where I'm doubting myself, where I just end up in a dark spot. But it's always up to yourself to bring you back up, you know? Especially me being one of the smaller guys, I'm always put down, even when they're not trying to put me down about my size or when they don't mean it in a negative way. It's just something that happens because I happen to be small. So whenever I do end up in a dark place thinking bad thoughts, I just go back and think of what made me fall in love with what I'm doing first.
That's definitely a good way to look at it, because even if you have, again, a moment where the size thing comes up, or the chemistry just wasn't right that night and I didn't put on the show I wanted to or whatever, but you have a whole bunch of other things to look at and be like, hey, I'm doing it, readjust, you know, pivot, and move forward. You know, the thing is, you know, I've heard it somewhere. It was a brilliant thing, and I don't know who I'm quoting, but somebody said, if you're going to fall, fall forward, right? Like, that's the thing. Like, if you're going to fall, fall forward. That way, at least you're still making progress, right?
Yeah.
But what about injury? Again, I do remember, was a couple years ago, I remember you were, there was a picture. A couple years ago. Yeah, tell me about that injury. I vaguely remember seeing it online.
Yeah, well, that injury was more of a little, not little, it was an accident.
Sure.
I was wrestling for the LWA. It was their anniversary show, Legacy. I wrestled Daga for my trainers. He was he's still the LWA champion. It was a title match. I remember we were having a good time. The match was going so well. And then one spot blew off. I landed on my head on the concrete. And from there, I don't remember, but everybody says, I don't know why they don't like to talk about it, but I'll say it. I had a small seizure or something.
Okay.
I woke up. They took me on an ambulance to the hospital. I'm in the hospital. The doctors checked me. They said, you don't have a concussion for some reason. Like, I didn't even have a concussion.
Okay.
It was just the impact of the concrete on my head.
Yeah,
I went out. I had a little small seizure, and the doctor just advised me to take a month or two off. And, you know, I took my 1 month off, not two, and then came right back.
No, yeah, that's an interesting one. Yeah. And, you know, and I'm sure, you know, they check you out appropriately and all these things. But yeah, just because you get knocked out does not mean you get a concussion, right? Just because your body does something weird while you're unconscious doesn't mean that's a concussion if it looks like a seizure, things like that. Yeah, you've seen people, I mean, I've seen people, you know, get choked out or knocked out and that your body does shit that is not controllable, right? And it looks like a seizure. But again, it just depends on the severity of the impact, whether you're actually concussed or not. But yeah, I'm glad that that was pretty minor, you know, because again, that must have been scary. I can imagine, and I can see people's concern, because that does look scary if you don't know don't know what's going on. Of course, big question marks, you know. So glad you recovered from that, certainly. And nothing else, because again, you do some gravity defying shit, and it's like it seems more dangerous. Yeah. Your style, right?
Well, I mean, that's pretty much the biggest one. There's been like the swollen ankle, swollen knee, sprained ankle, yeah, but nothing I can't fix with some icy hot or some Bengay and wrap it up.
Yeah. Get the swelling down and tape that shit up and keep on going, right? Yeah. We started off talking about the sweet Hispanic boy gimmick, Mexicano from Laredo, all this stuff. Like, what would you say to the guys and girls coming up, Hispanics and Latinos, people maybe on the border, people maybe kind of in that same space as you are? What would you maybe tell them about making it in the wrestling business, trying to make a name for yourself? And again, from that place of Mexican identity too, you know, what would you say to young folks, brown people, trying to become wrestlers?
To start off, I'd say, échenle ganas. Don't give up.
There we go.
I know it sounds kind of cliche, but just keep going. Keep trying your hardest. Keep giving 100% of you, 110% of you. And if you dedicate, if it's about wrestling or about anything in life, if you dedicate time to wrestling, wrestling is going to give back to you. It goes into anything in life. If you dedicate time to anything, it's going to give back to you. And luckily, I've seen wrestling giving back to me from all this time I've dedicated to it. So if you really want something, you really want to be part of a business, of a group, of anything, just keep going. Don't doubt yourself. Be confident in your mind. I'm going to do this. You need your confidence up, because if your confidence is down, nobody else is going to believe in you except you. You're your biggest doubter. Tú eres el único que te estás deteniendo en este momento.
Right.
That's all I have to say.
No, I think that's good advice. And again, that's not just wrestling advice. That's just good life advice, that self-confidence thing, right? That we get confidence when the crowd says we had a good show. Right. So we get confidence externally. But then the real important shit is that self-confidence coming from within, coming from inside. Right. Because you may not always get that reaction. Right. And so how do you still keep moving forward? And so I think that's really, really smart, brilliant advice, actually. And so you've been busy traveling, all sorts of cool shit. What kind of upcoming gigs do you have, like, in the next I don't know. Like, how far out are you kind of booked, and how does that go for you? So what kind of gigs you got coming up?
I got several gigs that I can't talk about yet. But the ones I can talk about, I want to let y'all know that I have several shows in Texas and out of Texas that I'm really excited for. I didn't expect to get so much following off of one Game Changer Wrestling show. I got a good amount of following, and it just made people, promoters in Texas, see me more. Promotions in Texas that hadn't known about me saw me, and they're like, we have them like four hours away. Why haven't we used them? So that opened up more work for me. And I have one match in particular for New Texas. I'm wrestling Gringo Loco, and I just want that match. Like, that one-on-one is one that I've been looking for. The Base God versus the Sweet Hispanic Boy. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that, I think.
No, that's great. Yeah, that getting on a stage, again, one of the bigger indie companies, GCW, and that got eyes on you and your talent back in Texas, where you're closer to these promotions and they can get you, you know, easier and quicker because you're right there. It's semi-local. Yeah, Texas is a big place, but, you know, at least it's still Texas, and it's not like, oh, I got noticed in Washington, right? And it's like, well, you know, Texas is home. And so that got more eyes on you there. And I think that's dope, man. I think that's dope. So clearly you're luchador, pro wrestler in the fighting world. And this is the Writers and Fighters podcast. So as customary, I always ask the people in the fight world, do you do anything in terms of reading and writing? Because that's the other half of my podcast. I'm just kind of curious. I always ask the wrestlers, do you do any reading or writing?
I try to read every now and then. I bought the Young Bucks book and I haven't finished it.
Oh, cool.
I've just been a little procrastinating on that. But when I was younger, I was a little into reading. Like, the book The Outsiders is one of my favorites.
S.E. Hinton, yeah, good book, yeah.
The Outsiders, yeah. That one, and then I'm pretty sure that's enough for reading. writing, I have a little journal thing where I write anytime I feel down or anytime something nice happens to me. I like to write it down just so I can keep a memory of, like, where I was and where I am now. My little journal keeps me grounded.
No, yeah. It's one of those things I've found. MMA fighters and boxers and wrestlers, a lot of them journal. Like, that's one thing I've discovered through the podcast, that a lot of folks do like to journal. And I find that one of the most healthy outlets for a lot of stuff, because, you know, I'm a writing teacher and stuff, and so writing professor, and so I'm always telling my students, like, write everything down, even if it's in a journal or on a post-it note or something, because having ideas in your head are not really of any use. Once you put them on paper and you can see them, you can touch them, then shit becomes real, you know? And now you have this chronicle of your, you know, your journal where, hey, I kicked ass over here. A few months ago, I was down, and look how I came back. Like, mm-hmm. That's just a smart move in general. And I do know that wrestlers do like reading the wrestling biographies. I remember one of the reasons I became a writer was because I read Mick Foley's first book. And I was like, this book is fucking great. This dude can write? I want to do that one day. And so he's actually one of my favorite wrestlers and one of my favorite writers, because he's written a whole lot, you know, as you know. A few biographies and children's books and shit like that too. So yeah, I'm glad you picked up the Young Bucks book, and you got to finish it and then report back to me. Okay, I'll be your professor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll send it to you. I'll write an essay.
Yeah, yeah. Or you do your homework. Well, shit, man. I want people to keep up with you. I think if people, I know this podcast is going to do well because you have a following, but I also want people to look you up and follow you and see this sweet Hispanic boy flying all over the ring. How can people follow you on social media? What you got for social media plugs, ASF?
On social media, on Twitter and Instagram, VASF_27. On Facebook, there's a like page called Antonio San Francisco. And if you go to prowrestlingtees.com/ASF, you get a link to several of my t-shirts that are on there. And if you want any of the t-shirt, 8x10s, any merch that I have, I have merch at any show I'm at that's exclusive, that's not on Pro Wrestling Tees. So if you want a pro wrestling t-shirt, you can go get one there. But I have exclusive ASF ones from Texas Deathmatch Wrestling at my tables.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's
hell
a collaboration we did. And that's all I have to plug.
Oh, that's great, dude. No, yeah, that's awesome. And so I did look at your shirts on Pro Wrestling Tees a while back, and I was like, oh, you got some cool designs there. I didn't have this on my list, but I'll ask you now. The hand gesture, it's like the American Sign Language gesture for I love you, I believe, and you do it up on your forehead almost, like, and you do this little gimmick. Tell me about that real quick, and that'll be one of the pictures I share on social media so people can see you doing it. But tell me a little bit about that gesture. Yeah.
The gesture first came, I'll be honest with you, I was a really big Machine Gun Kelly fan.
Oh, nice.
At a point. And then he started, like, he had, like, a rivalry with Eminem. And yeah, Eminem
made
a song called the Rap God, right?
Of course.
And he made a diss track called the Rap Devil. So I'm like, I'm going to be the MGK of wrestling. I'm the wrestling devil. And then I started tagging with Bryson Scott, and I turned into the Stud Devil. And I kept doing this, and I got a good following. And I have a fan that's she can't hear, and she would talk to me in sign languages. And one time the mom, I didn't know this because I'm not familiar with sign language, but one time when I came out, the mom told me, I really appreciate that you use the I love you sign as your sign for wrestling. And it just made it mean more to me. So now every time I come out and y'all see me do this, I'm just saying I love you to everybody that's looking at me.
That's so cool. It starts off as horns, like the devil, right? And then but it's actually a display of love in another language, right? I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
And that got imprinted on there because of the fans and because of a specific fan. And yeah, and it's just a cool look. And, you know, everybody has their catchphrases. And John Cena puts his hands up like this. And, you know, everybody has their, you know, Cactus Jack does bang bang and the fingers.
Yeah. Right?
And so, and yours is the, you know, the horn / I love you thing. And again, a cool, different thing I haven't seen before. So good thing to put on a t-shirt for sure. Well, shit, man. I enjoyed this, dude. I enjoyed this. We will direct everybody over to your social media stuff. Get some more eyes on ASF, Antonio San Francisco, the sweet Hispanic boy, El Dulce Niño Hispano from Laredo. Dude, I appreciate this.
Mucho flow,
mucho flow. Mucho flow.
I appreciate you having me on.
No, dude, it was a blast, dude. And again, go get some more gigs and open invite whenever you want to come back on, dude.
Hey, appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Peace. All right, y'all. Thanks for listening to that interview with ASF, Antonio San Francisco, El Dulce Niño Hispano, the sweet Hispanic boy from Laredo, Texas. If you want to keep up with ASF, and I know you do, head over to Instagram and Twitter and follow him at @TheASF_27. You can also check out Facebook and search Antonio San Francisco and like his page on there. Don't forget to head over to ProWrestlingTees.com/ASF. Check out his merch, buy a t-shirt, and support the guy. Speaking of supporting, he's booked for GCW on Friday, September 24th. Game Changer Wrestling is going to be in New York City, and ASF is on that card. But you don't got to go to the Big Apple to watch him. You can just check it out on Fight TV. In addition, you also get stuff like Minoru Suzuki versus Homicide. Matt Cardona is going to be there. Nick Gage is even on the card. We want to support independent pro wrestling, and we really want to support ASF, so check out that show. As far as the podcast, you know the drill. RidersandFighters.com. Riders and Fighters all over social media. Make sure you're subscribed on your favorite podcast app because we have more interviews for Latino Heritage Month coming up. Aside from that, you guys know the drill. Be good. Be safe. Take care of each other. And don't take no shit from anybody. We'll talk next week. Peace.